You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
This is David Rovix, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
Hello and welcome to the Climate Action Show, coming to you from the studios of 3CR Radical Radio in Melbourne, which is on the stolen, never-ceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. You can also listen to the Climate Action Show on Radio Skid Row in Sydney. I'm Rosie, and with me is our very own award-winning community radio volunteer, Tilda. Today we'll listen to an interview with Dr. Jeremy Walker about his submission to the recent Senate inquiry into climate misinformation and disinformation. The title of Dr. Walker's submission sums up the current situation perfectly. How fossil fuel capital built the global disinformation machinery of the Atlas Network to defeat climate policy and disable democracy. A warning to Australia and to all nations. The full title of the inquiry is a bit of a mouthful: Australian Senate Select Committee Inquiry on Information Integrity on Climate Change and Energy 2025. The Select Committee's findings and recommendations were handed down in March this year and are now on the public record, along with related documents and submissions. And we're very grateful to have the opportunity to learn what came to light during the inquiry directly from the world expert on the history of the Atlas Network and climate disinformation. But first, some background on our guest. Dr. Jeremy Walker is Senior Lecturer in the School of Communications, Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences, University of Technology, Sydney. He's a member and past Director of the Climate Society and Environment Research Centre, or CSIRC, at UTS, and a Research Fellow of the Whitlam Institute, Western Sydney University, and the International Climate Social Science Network, based at Brown University, Rhode Island, USA. He is the author of More Heat Than Life, The Tangled Roots of Ecology, Energy and Economics, published in 2020. Hi, Jeremy. Thanks so much for coming on to the Climate Action Show here at 3CR for the second time, in fact. We also spoke with you in April last year, shortly before the federal election, when you explained to us the origins and workings of the little-known but hugely powerful Atlas Network and its influence over elections and climate policy around the world. Since then, a Senate inquiry into climate misinformation and disinformation was held, and the Atlas Network was mentioned in a number of the submissions considered by the inquiry. Your own submission, which of course featured the Atlas Network, a beautifully clear and comprehensive document, also includes meaningful recommendations. First of all, can you tell us about the Senate inquiry and the report that came out of it?
Sure. Thank you, Rosie, and thank you very much to 3CR for having me on air again. And I'm really excited to inform your listeners, particularly in Victoria, but whoever picks up the recording afterwards. I think it was a very important inquiry, the Senate Select Committee on Information Integrity on Climate Change and Energy. And it's a really important inquiry because if anyone's been, and I'm sure you and your listeners have been for some time, if anyone has been paying attention to the public understanding of both climate change science, energy policy, climate policy in Australia, for many, many years. I mean, I think right since it became a public matter in the late 80s, in 1989, when people started to really discuss it in earnest. This inquiry, as it shows, is that the entire public sphere, that is the sphere of communication, of public media, of public communication, advertising, and so on, is and now, of course, with social media and the rise of AI-generated, inquiry, someone from the inquiry called Slopaganda, is that we have the entire sort of political sphere in which democracy operates is sort of swamped with deliberately crafted disinformation across all aspects of climate change, energy policy, right? And this has determined the outcome in many occasions, I think, of elections, federal elections in Australia, state-level elections, and all around the world. So this inquiry, I think, is really, really important. I believe it's the first time that this has happened anywhere in the world, that there's been a systematic examination of a national parliamentary body into the organisation, extent, techniques of intentional manipulation of public opinion, public knowledge, to confuse or disorient people around the reality of global, runaway global heating, the cause of it, which is far and away the major cause is coal, oil and gas combustion, and to defeat any policy measure, no matter how modest and it might be, to achieve the aims of surviving. So I think it's really, really important. It was, as the report also says, it came about in tandem with the realisation of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, their realisation that it's not so much, and I put this right at the front of my report, I think this is the most important message, is that it's not that climate policy has failed, it's been defeated systematically and organised in defeat in country after country and at the UN level. And the primary tool for that is through the deliberate production and dissemination of disinformation, that is intentionally false and misleading information. And, of course, the authors of that disinformation are people who are working for the fossil fuel corporations and investors and private billionaires associated with that. So I think this is a really important inquiry, and not least because obviously my particular interest is to communicate as well as I can some 20 years of my research into the global architecture through which this occurs, and it is... It's a global atlas network of allegedly independent, not-for-profit research institutes, none of which are actually university institutes, but were set up by the fossil fuel industry, certainly in Australia anyway, precisely to both attack and displace accredited university expertise with people who would say things that the giant large corporations could not say in their own name. So they created this sort of whole Potemkin village of pseudo research institutes. So I think it was really important for that anyway, because it's one of the first times in which this sort of whole architecture and the techniques have been used. And there was 243 submissions. Mine came in at number 243. But there were many, many submissions, including from... really interesting research and important research that's been done by other university researchers and institutes. So it was good to see that being collected and put onto the public record. And it made so the other thing is, the website for the inquiry has a huge resource. The report itself runs to some worth. Several hundred pages, and it's really well put together. I think it's a really important document, and the submissions themselves are very interesting to look at, as are the Hansard and the video recordings from hearings that were held. They're also really important documents. They're all available on the Senate's website, not only for Australians but for everybody around the world, because this is obviously not just our problem, it's everyone's problem. So I think it's a really, really important thing, and it was timed with the UN, the United Nations realising themselves also So that's the main problem. The feed and climate policy is this organised production of disinformation to manipulate public opinion, democratic outcomes, and government policy. So, yeah, I think it's really important. And I'd recommend anybody to go and have a look at the website, and perhaps 3CR can publish some of the links attached to this interview on your website.
We sure will do that. Yeah, I just wonder about some of the people, some of the panel members who are also the very ones that are deeply embroiled in the Atlas network. Did they not have a, conflict of interest, if there's ones?
Well, one of the things that was remarkable, and I wouldn't, I think one of the things that is quite remarkable about the Senate committee, the final report, is that the committee, you know, system requires the committee to work together to produce the report. And so the report itself, you know, can only be written on the basis of the submissions that are made by the public. They can't solicit the submissions, they can't, you know, edit the submissions or advise anybody on the content of the submissions. They have to be completely... And then they make the report on the basis of the written submissions and on the basis of the hearings and the Hansard and the documents that's provided through that process. So it's quite an impressive document, given that there has to be some level of consensus. And then, of course, the dissenting reports. The majority report was endorsed by the Labor senators, the Green senators, David Pocock, and interestingly, Ian McLaughlin from the Liberals, which is somewhat surprising. But I think one of the things that really came out in the process was that I read most of the 243 submissions, and I think by my count, nearly 80 of the submissions were from people who were either directly associated and employed by Atlas Network think tanks, such as the Institute of Public Affairs and the Centre for Independent Studies. But there were a lot of submissions from people who have long been working within that network here in Australia in various spin-off organisations, or, you know, what I would call AstroTurf. So, you know, so they would have multiple different names and organisations, and they would make multiple submissions, but as if they were independent individuals making submissions. But many of these people have long been engaged in the climate disinformation campaigns around the IPA and the Centre for Independent Studies, which are, of course, founded and funded from the beginning by major oil, gas and coal mining companies. And Malcolm Roberts made a submission, it's quite topical given the alleged popularity of One Nation now. And it was quite interesting. I read his submission, and I didn't realize he had a personal website, but one of the things that I managed to discover through that is that he has been working with the, as part of the Atlas Network, disinformation operations since well before he was part of One Nation. So people might remember going back to the huge, massive disinformation campaign that was mobilised against climate policy in the government of Kevin Rudd and then Julia Gillard. This huge anti-climate policy, and also you might remember that several things were proposed, you know, carbon pricing, which got later dubbed the carbon tax, public government support for solar power, which is now an enormous success story that kicked off during that government. But the government was brought down by this huge disinformation campaign. And one of the minor organisations hanging off the main campaign, which was run by, led by Tim Wilson, who was then leading the Institute of Public Affairs campaign. But there were many others involved. So basically the whole Atlas Network branch in Australia lit up, and they were all pumping out the same kind of messaging. But there was a minor one called the Galileo Movement, and people might remember that. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous taking the name of a genuine scientist in vain to do, you know, anti-scientist information for the fossil fuel industry. But, Senator Robert listed all of the so-called scientific advisors. So he was the one that actually ran this and set up this organization called the Galileo Movement. And all of the experts that he listed as being the scientific advisors, I went through them one by one, and there's even a table in the report that I submit my submission. I drew this up on a table, and every single one of the so-called advisors to his scientific refutation of the reality of global heating, every single one of them was can be directly associated with one or more of the Atlas Network think tanks in Australia or the US or elsewhere, every single one. So even before Roberts was working for One Nation, he was importing mostly American-generated pseudoscience from the small handful of ex-scientists or scientists who were willing to be bought by the fossil fuel industry. And this just again shows how I think the other thing that would be while we're talking about this particular topic, which is so topical now, the people might remember when the Queensland One Nation leadership were caught a few years ago by a journalist from Al Jazeera, and they were filmed fundraising in the United States. Now, most people who remember that they were promising, they went to the National Rifle Association promising to repeal Australia's gun laws for in exchange perhaps for money from the NRA. I don't know if they ever got it. But the thing that was much more telling to me was that they went to Koch Industries asking for money, and they said that they would change the electoral laws in Australia if they had enough money. And again, I don't know whether Koch Industries gave them any money, but they may have, they may not have. But the Koch Industries is, of course, one of the major, through the Koch Foundation, it's a giant oil refining-based, huge private corporation led by the Koch brothers. And Charles Koch has been, from the beginning, one of the major funders and supporters and organizers of the Atlas Network in the U.S. So it's this, and now we have Pauline Hanson openly declaring herself, going to visit Mar-a-Lago and appearing in front of a CPAC banner, at Trump's private compound with the gold and white podium and the huge American flag. So, we should be seeing this rise of Hanson in its proper perspective, which is as part of this global push to, extreme right-wing racist destabilization, polarization of the community, authoritarianism. But the main reason for that is that she is this is an movement which is fundamentally about destroying clean energy transition, and that's where the support's really coming from.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Climate Action Show on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on your dial. My name's Rosie, and we're going to return to my interview with Dr. Jeremy Walker about the Senate inquiry into climate misinformation and disinformation.
What now happens now in response to this report and the recommendations? Is there any chance the recommendations are going to be implemented? Or what do you think about the recommendations?
I think there's some very good ones, and some of them are quite close to what I had suggested. The recommendations in the final report are put better because I think obviously these are written by senators who are well aware of the existing legislation that's been proposed or that exists or that was suggested and has been lapped or that lapsed or that was, taken off the notice paper. And so there's some very good, I think there are some very good recommendations in there. If I was to just quickly look at it, the first one is that the recommendation, this was from the majority report that the Australian government support and adopt the United Nations Global Principles on Information Integrity and so on. But there's a whole lot of other recommendations. So another one was that to strengthen the capacity of government to protect the public from organised disinformation and from dark money and so on. So the recommendations, again, there's quite a few of them, and I wouldn't want to go into too much depth, but one of them, for example, close to my heart, is that the Australian government increase funding for social science research relating to threats to climate and energy information integrity, including potential solutions. So there is a lot of expertise out there, but as people are probably aware that universities have been through constant rounds of budget cutting and funding cutting, and again, this is another, I think, ultimately an outcome of some 50 years of Atlas Network output. So if you go and look at the very reason, I mean, one of the things that I tabled in were documents from the Atlas Network's own internal archives that show how the Centre for Independent Studies in Sydney was formed, and it was formed by, we mentioned this in the last show, and I think you got some angry letters from the Centre for Independent Studies, but we now have the actual... their own documents up on the Senate website to demonstrate this. It was founded for the purpose by the founder of Santos, was the guy, John Bonython, who founded Santos, a South Australian Northern Territory oil search corporation, now hugely powerful and intimidating player in Australia. But they organised the original private meetings between Anthony Fisher, the founder of the Atlas Network, in Australia to set up the Centre for Independent Studies in 1976. And the point of it is to basically constantly attack the universities, constantly attack them and as being, whatever it is. In those days, they'd say, oh, it's full of communists, and now they'll say it's too woke, or it's irrelevant, or, or it's biased, or whatever it is. And then to basically displace university researchers' views in the media with their own views, which are obviously presented as if they were researchers, but they aren't. So I think there's a whole lot of things there that we need to look at, and I'd recommend people have a look at it. Another thing is we know that fossil fuel industry, through the think tanks and various pop-up entities which they secretly fund, are constantly trying to insert and manipulate the education system and the curriculum. So there were some very interesting examples of Woodside-sponsored, STEM activities for primary school kids, which are basically there to normalise and promote, and celebrate the very industries which are, literally destroying their future. We're at 1.5 degrees now above the pre-industrial average temperature. I read something today, or something, it's thought that there's about something like 3,500 deaths per day in India right now because of the current heat wave, and by the end of the century we're looking at a 4 degrees rise. So, students are actually being active, and sporting clubs and so on, they're actively being normalised, the branding and messaging from fossil fuel industry, which is literally destroying their future. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of them. I think the key thing is, there's recommendations that are specific to different government bodies to improve their quality of transparency and investigation and so on. There's a whole lot of stuff around how are they going to govern the use of systematic deep fakes and multiple body counts that are organised to flood, the boomer Facebook with this kind of polarising and disinformation messaging and so on. So I would recommend that people actually take the time to go and have a look at the report. So I think there's some really good suggestions in there. The one that was perhaps didn't make it into the majority report is the probably the most important, or one of the most important ones, which is that there should be, we need legislation to protect the public from organised disinformation during elections. So another senator, Zali Siegel, the independent member, has put a truth in electoral advertising bill, and has one drafted and ready to go. Unfortunately, the Labor didn't agree to include that recommendation for truth in electoral communications,
which is
very
bizarre.
Sad, I thought. Yeah, it's quite disappointing. But we've seen that this happens over and over again. We saw it with the voice referendum when you had an advance, which is basically a pop-up propaganda organisation funded by the same people that fund and sit on the boards of the network think tanks here, which just flooded the electorate with multiple fake front groups, and they were registered with false addresses and couldn't even find out who they were. None of their websites said who the people were behind the messaging. We've seen this time and time again, with the deliberate manipulation and deliberately deceiving the electorate about who is saying what they're saying. And so this is a really important issue that elections are being flooded with vicious, deliberate propaganda from ultimately, it's hard to say for sure because it's not transparent, but it's pretty clear if you follow the pattern that this is coming from, the foreign-dominated fossil fuel industry to manipulate elections. Mm-hmm. One of the examples I give in my submission is the last election in Queensland, where you had an entity called Coal Australia, which one of the major donors to which was Peabody, the giant American coal corporation. So it's not even really Coal Australia. And they funded the Australian Institute of Progress, was the biggest election spend that made it onto the public declarations of the Queensland Electoral Commission, by far the biggest spend on election advertising, and was from Coal Australia, and it went to the Australian Institute of Progress, which is the Atlas Network partner in Brisbane, and a new pop-up called Australians for Prosperity, which uses exactly the same logo, the same type, the same fonts as an Atlas Network organisation called Americans for Prosperity, use the same kind of rhetoric. Its board included people which we can associate with other members of the Atlas Network in various ways. And they basically saturated the social media with all these attack ads on the then Labor Queensland government's clean energy program. The Labor government lost to the Liberal Party, and then immediately the Liberal Party went around. They cancelled a wind farm proposal, which had been gone through every stage of the approvals process, had been approved to be built, and they cancelled. It was big enough to power, I think, a quarter of Queensland's homes. This wind farm's ready to go, and they just simply cancelled it. And then they cited community concerns. And if you look at who was generating the community concerns against clean energy around the country, particularly in Queensland, it was an organisation called Rainforest Reserves. And again, as I show in my submission, Rainforest Reserves were basically... And we learn also through the inquiry process, they submitted like four different submissions, I think, and all of them were generated by AI and contain multiple falsified references to publications that don't exist. So, they literally perjured themselves multiple times, even in the inquiry into climate information. But they've been doing this over and over again. Like, they have hundreds of these submissions all around the country to every proposed clean energy development, flooding it with fake submissions. But then, so what we saw was in that process in Queensland, you had fossil fuel industry directly sponsoring attack ads, giving to Atlas Network organisations, and then the government coming in and rewarding the coal industry by sinking the clean energy projects, which are already legal, already built, and then citing the output of yet another one of these AstroTurfs as one of the reasons for why the community didn't want the wind farm. So, that is a really, really crucial one. We can't how can you have a democracy when the all channels of communication during the election are flooded with unidentifiable, unattributable you know, disinformation that's ultimately being sponsored by foreign fossil fuel interests.
It's interesting how, you know, a coal expansion that's been approved is sort of set absolutely in concrete, whereas, you know, wind farms that just can, that were approved and ready to go, as you say, just cancelled just like that. No talk of whatever it was called, sovereign liability or whatever that means.
Oh, sovereign risk and all.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a very interesting point, anyone picking up on it, because, you know, this is always, you know, like we can't, every time it's suggested that maybe we should ask the giant, mostly foreign petroleum and gas corporations extracting Australia's gas from the Northwest Shelf, and this is going right back to the Whitlam government, which tried to, you know incidentally buy out those leases and the loan affair that brought them down. You'll see the Atlas think tanks and the Murdoch press and, you know, up in arms about, oh, sovereign risk and, oh, investor confidence. But the whole point of what the these Atlas think tanks do is deliberately sabotage investor confidence in clean energy. So, you know, what they have done, what we've seen since last we spoke, because the Liberal Party openly came. So, again, we saw this with the offshore wind farms are going to kill whales campaign, which is, was a direct copy of this, the campaign rolled out by think tanks, Atlas Network think tanks in the United States on the East Coast and then brought out here. So after a while, they set up all of these, you know, these astroturfs and pseudo-community organisations which flood the local communities with, you know, false information. And then, you know, basically, then you'll see the Liberal Party picking it up and going, oh, the community doesn't like it, and then saying we will cancel all those wind farms. So even though they didn't get elected, the developers that were going to or were interested in building offshore wind, certainly in New South Wales, I don't know, so much in Victoria, they've all left. You know, they've actually left the country. Mm-hmm. So even, you know, they've been... So basically the point is to destroy investment and confidence in this industry. But the key thing that I also want to emphasise on that point is that on the same day that the Senate published its final report of the committee into climate and energy disinformation, a very important organisation called the Australian Security Leaders Climate Group also published a briefing paper timed, I think, to be released at the same time. And I maybe you can put that up on your website. But that basically was a whole a group of people who have served as, you know, generals in the army and admirals in the navy and intelligence officers. So these are very serious people, and they were saying that disinformation and deliberate propaganda designed to defeat and government policy around our clean energy and polarise communities along the transmission routes, for example, as you've seen for 2 years, they've been doing this along the interconnected cable route from the Victoria New South Wales interconnector, the VNI West cable. But these are like national security level issues. That climate, you know, the runaway climate change is the number one security risk to Australia, and our dependence on foreign sources of energy, fossil fuel, is a huge security risk to Australia's economy and to our security and to our prosperity. You know, and so what I want people to think about is that, you know, if like people who are like me, who are fortunate enough to have been able to, you know, purchase their own home, if you have solar panels in your own house and you have a battery that's, you know, you have a battery and if you have an EV, you are sovereign. You have energy sovereignty. You are your roof is providing all the power you need for your house and all the power you need for your car. It's more or less, once you've built the gear, installed the gear, it's free, and it costs next to nothing, the actual energy itself. And we don't have to go and buy it from the Middle East. We don't have to be vulnerable to the whims of the United States, you know, oil wars. If you want to talk about sovereignty, independence, energy security, clean energy does that in spades. And if you wanted to think, so I think that's also a really important report to have a look at, the Australian Climate Security Leaders Group briefing paper. So they you know, they really emphasise that point, that this is not merely a question of, you know, what's the cheapest form of electricity, or it's literally a matter of Australia's national security that we confront and defeat this organised disinformation coming from the fossil fuel sector.
Now, you briefly touched on what ATLAS and including Pauline Hanson, what they're up to now. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I could do a little bit on that. So I think the one of the things, again, if your listeners would be have the time to actually go have a look at my submission, it's organised into sort of three main parts. One is the first part I document how the fossil fuel majors, petroleum companies and coal companies, including their subsidiaries in Australia that dominate Australia's fossil sector, you know, from the 60s as well, that they had extensive early knowledge that their industry would cause catastrophic global heating, right? For example, I quote a Senate report, a committee report from 1969, and where this was raised multiple times by a report on air pollution from 1969. So they knew this going way back. I also quote the original, I've got direct documents where Exxon, and that you can read them yourselves, I've linked to them, where the Exxon leadership in the US is directly commissioning the Atlas Economic Research Foundation, which is the central hub that goes around the world founding and setting up these allegedly independent economics research institutes, which are all really part of the same global machinery, and everyone we know who's funding them, which we don't in Australia. The sources of funding are obscured from the public. They seek to influence. But we know that it's fossil fuel interest. And that's that part. So I've got all of that documented there for you to have a look at. Which really, you know, begins in 1988, and I can trace the export of the disinformation campaign through to the IPA from as early as 1990, 1991. And then in the latter part, I go into quite a bit of detail about how, you know, from after the advance and the Atlas Network successfully defeated the voice referendum and also the treaty and the right of truth commission process for the interests of the fossil fuel and mining sector, which has always been the main source of opposition to constitutional justice for First Nations people in Australia, because they don't want to have any, you know, competing claims on land rights. Okay, so after they did that, straight away the Atlas Network here set up four campaigns, which are all the same campaign really, but they were running in parallel, and I document in that great detail. Firstly, the offshore wind farms are going to kill the whales campaign, the dump net zero, which is ruining the economy campaign. We need nuclear campaign, and the other one mounted by Steve Nowakowski from Rainforest Reserves, and you know, the whole thing about how solar, wind, and batteries and transmission lines are going to destroy our farms and then the bush and inland. So they were all, that's all one whole, so I've documented in great detail all of the front groups that were set up and shown how they were connected back to the major Atlas think tanks here, and then back to the fossil fuel funding sources that we do know of or can infer. But as soon as that, as I was writing my submission for the committee in late 2025, I started to see suddenly that, you know, we saw advance going on about, oh, we've got to stop mass immigration. Then Daniel Wild from the IPA came out and made a speech at the American Conservative Union's CPAC branch here in Australia, which again is run by a fellow called Andrew Cooper, who was trained by the Atlas Network in the States as well. And he, at their conference, he was saying we've got to dump net zero and we've got to stop mass immigration. And so it's very much, I mean, it's very clearly this whole movement that we're seeing to normalize racism and right-wing extremism is the next phase of the campaign to defeat the clean energy revolution, right? And to restore control of government policy to the fossil fuel industry, right? So, you know, this is happening all around the world. It's not just Australia. And one thing that I would encourage people to look at is the, particularly in Victoria. So I mentioned earlier this, an interconnecting transmission line. It's called the Victoria New South Wales Interconnector VNI, and it passes through Western Victoria, where it's planned to be built through there, through farmland there. And then it joins another interconnecting transmission line between Adelaide and Sydney. So this is going to be, you know, unlock a huge amount of clean energy, which will drastically lower in the long run consumer electricity prices, will drastically push coal and gas off the electricity grid, and give us, you know, enormous energy security and autonomy from fossil fuel sector and from imports and from price volatility and price rises and inflation. So we'll counter inflation too. So one thing that I began to notice was that there's a very interesting pseudo-documentary produced by Advance. You can go and look at it on YouTube. It's called Dollars and Destruction. And it's basically full of just straight-out disinformation. And really everybody that appears in that so-called documentary, which is alleging that, you know, clean energy is going to wreck the economy and poison the crops and make the whales sick, all the same stuff. But it's really clear that they're targeting the farming communities all along the route of this cable, right? And when my nation won the seat of Farrer, so that's in the southern New South Wales, along the along the Murray River, where so the Adelaide to New South Wales transmission lines that are going to unlock all of this renewable energy run through that electorate. And then the VNI West Cape transmission line comes from Melbourne up to join that, it's a north-south connector to join this east-west connector. So this is a massive, so that what they're doing, obviously they know what they're doing, the fossil fuel industry, they know they're very good at engineering and long-term planning, so they know how important this is. So they've been actively doing propaganda all along the route. And one organisation which I would encourage people to be very suspicious about, which appears in this Advance video, is a thing called Stop Labor's Towers, or sometimes it's called Stop AusNet's Towers. It's the same website. And they have this sort of, you know, red logo with scary, you know, transmission lines. And they appear in that video, and they appear in every bit of Atlas Network-generated so-called news content. So one of their sources is a thing called Newsmax on YouTube. You can find it there. And everybody that appears on that is in some way connected with the Atlas Network here, doing disinformation for the fossil fuel industry, or, you know, promoting racism, which is a new thing. And so if you look at the website of Stop Labor's Towers, again, it's completely anonymous. They don't tell you who they are. It's full of like AI-generated sort of, you know, polarizing rage bait images, like AI-generated images of, you know, that look very much like, you know, Ubud Aussie white farmers with hats standing up against the oppressor, and they've got all these, you know, flaming, you know, AI-generated burning tables and saying that, you know, I mean, it looks again like a classic propaganda operation. So that kind of, it seems to me that now we see that the another source you can look at is, if you want to find out what the Atlas Network is up to in Australia, is Spectator Australia. And so Newsmax is a US cable, you know, right-wing cable thing which complements Fox News there. And it was its initial funding came from Richard Mellon Scaife, who's one of the richest people that ever lived. lived. He ploughed hundreds of millions, if not more, into the Atlas Network in the US from the beginning. Was the heir to Gulf Oil, which is now merged with Chevron, one of the largest oil companies in the world. It's, again, very active in Australia and the offshore shelf, I believe, doesn't pay any taxes. So they're all out there, pushing, not merely pushing One Nation along, because, of course, One Nation has vowed to scrap the VNO West cable, but they're also pushing the Liberal Party to adopt pretty much the same views as One Nation when it comes to, playing the race card, vilification of immigrants, vilification of Indigenous communities, and also the Liberal Party has promised to scrap the VNO West transmission line too. So this is not accidental. I guess what I would be encouraging people to be really suspicious about is whether or not this is really grassroots farmer resistance. There's many farmers that I think are not misled by this kind of disinformation and propaganda, but reports that I've had from people who live there and who are quite interested in potentially, developing an income from hosting clean energy infrastructure on their farmland, that going to meetings put on by the developers and then the meetings being sabotaged by blow-ins that nobody knows who they are from somewhere else that are connected to these Stop Labor's towers that sabotage and just yell and threaten people and basically make it unsafe and shut down the meeting. So these are the kind of tactics that we're seeing, and this is quite intentional and deliberate, basically trying to make inland Australia a no-go zone for clean energy.
There are all kinds of reasons people end up with issues with alcohol and other drugs, and it's nothing new. Hi, I'm Professor Scott Wilson from the not-for-profit Aboriginal Drug and Alcohol Council. What always helps is to reflect on what life might be like without the substance abuse, and then take action. Step one is simple. See your GP or drug and alcohol worker and ask for help today. You can visit us at adac.org.au.
A 3CR supporter.
Hello again, I'm Rosie. You're tuned into 3CR Community Radio. You can find us online at 3cr.org.au. This is the Climate Action Show. Stay tuned for the conclusion of my interview with Atlas expert Dr. Jeremy Walker.
So I suppose the good thing, as you say, that's come out of this Senate inquiry is that it unearths all this information and makes it public. But you have to look pretty hard for it to find the information, because it's not presented at all in the media. I mean, The Guardian had a few articles on it and on those AI-generated fake submissions. But other than that, unless you dig very deep, you don't hear about them. So I guess that's one of the reasons we've got you on here, try and educate the public and so that, it can be talked about and exposed. And, the more people understand it, the better, obviously.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I mean, it's really critical. I mean, I think that was one of the recommendations in the report, was the, fortification of independent media and journalism. Because we know, there were some very good pieces written on the ABC, long-form pieces. There was one, a really, really informative one, which you can look up on the Atlas Network by a brilliant journalist there in the economics and business section called Gareth Hutchins. He gave a really good history of the organisation of the Atlas Network think tanks and the neoliberal doctrine. The only criticism I would make of that is that he probably didn't emphasise enough, this isn't really well known yet, but the extent to which all of these free market think tanks were, wherever we know who was paying for it, and of course it was very important for them to disguise that. In every case that I've found, you had major oil companies and private oil billionaires providing the funding to set them up in the first place. There was a good account. There were some good reports on it from he reported on the Senate hearings, and he also wrote up did a really good report on the Australian Climate Security Leaders briefing again. So I think that it did get some press, but we would never expect. I mean, the other thing that people need to be aware of is, for example, you know, if you read Australian Financial Review, I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen them give a platform to, gas CEOs saying, you know, we need more gas for whatever reason, without ever mentioning that it's catastrophic for the survival of Australia. I mean, anyone who's, like, nobody is allowed to say that the ocean, the complete destruction of ocean ecosystems and biodiversity off the South Australian coast is caused by the fossil fuel industry. It's dying, or that the algal bloom that's killing everything and making the ocean toxic and unswimmable is because the ocean's getting hotter, which is because of fossil fuel combustion. Yep. Right. Channel 7 is majority owned by an organisation called Seven Group, which you can go and look at their website, is a Western Australian oil and gas company, of course. And they have someone from ExxonMobil on the board, so they're never going to promote this kind of really important information to the public. Financial Review, you know, they've been promoting Gina Reinhart's right to manipulate public opinion and support extreme right-wing candidates, without mentioning, of course, that the reason she does this is because she owns coal mines and a gas company called Senex. They want to make sure that they continue to profit from burning the world down. So, yeah, I think and of course the Murdoch Press was established by and for mining companies to produce propaganda, and they said so. So I think that is one of the big problems we have, obviously, is that the corporate media is, you know, who has the most money. Historically, it's been the fossil fuel industry, and they want to make sure that the public is conditioned to hearing and accepting the narratives that they want to push out there.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. But the information is out there, so, please go and have a look at the Senate Inquiry website. There's lots of good stuff there, and please, if you can, have a look at my submission and the other things I've mentioned.
Yep. We'll put links to all of those websites that you've mentioned in the website, the Climate Action Show website. Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we finish up?
Thank you very much for having me on. If there's something that I did want to add, it would be that, you know, just to reemphasise that point that, everybody's talking about Pauline Hanson and One Nation, and the only reason that they are getting anywhere is because the fossil fuel money, the Liberal Party. So the way that this works historically is that the Murdoch Press was established by the mining monopolies headquartered on Collins Street at Collins House in the early 20th century. They owned the press in Melbourne and radio already then, and they established News Corporation as a holding company so that they would go to country towns and buy up the newspapers there and then turn the editorial against the mining unions. So we know that they were set up by mining companies whose capital was subscribed in London. So, you know, foreign-owned mining companies to do propaganda, and they said so. And then the IPA, Institute of Public Affairs, was established again by the same interest. Keith Murdoch was on the board of it. A guy from Harold Darling from BHP was on there. Collins House mining people were represented. And that was set up, again, to do propaganda against organised labour when the Labour Party was enormously popular during World War II in 1943 and thereafter. And the Liberal Party was founded by, again, the same people in 1944, precisely for the same reason. So the fact that the Liberal Party is out there sabotaging clean energy, and now lining itself up with, quite disgracefully, these extreme right-wing positions, trying to chase the tail of One Nation. What this shows is that, that we ought to be horrified and disgusted by the attacks on, multicultural democracy in Australia. But any discussion we have about that, or attacks on women's rights or reproductive rights, any of these attacks that we're seeing on things that everybody thought was settled and normal and mainstream, they're all being driven by, I think, the same fundamental purpose, which is to create general chaos and disorientation and anxiety and despair in the community. But the main reason for this is to make sure that we don't break free from the political dominance of the oil industry, and particularly the, what I would call the Anglo-American oil empire, that, you know, the oil industry has been dominated by, you know, Exxon Mobil and Chevron and Shell, which is Anglo-Dutch, but still, for the entire 20th century. And if Australia wants to be independent and retain its democracy and retain its extremely successful experiments in egalitarian social democracy extremely, I think, successful experiment in multiculturalism, then the best way to do that is to aggressively accelerate the clean energy revolution, right? Because that is where the money comes from for extreme right-wing drifted politics. It's where Australia's dependent status as a sub-imperial power in the American empire comes from too. And if we look at the Trump administration's foreign policy, it's all about using all of the resources at its disposal to propel extreme right-wing governments into power all around the world. And so it's no accident that the racism and the construction of literally concentration camps in the U.S. around immigration, it's entirely connected to the revolt against the fossil fuel corporations and billionaires against clean energy. Mm. So I guess that's the one thing that I would say is that to just really, if we're going to talk about Pauline Hanson, we need to talk about basically she's there to hand, and sadly enough, the Liberal and National parties too are there to hand Australia's government and state power over to foreign fossil fuel interests. Mm. That's the main objective, I would think, of this sort of theatre of cruelty that they want to entertain us with. Minorities being bashed and dispossessed or whatever. So, yeah, if you can, get solar, get an EV, and push all levels of government for rapid decarbonisation and retrenchment of fossil fuels. And that's, I think, the best way we can protect our democracy in this very dangerous and overheating world.
Yeah, and of course, keep listening to 3CR, because
yes,
3CR will never be bought by anybody, let alone fossil fuel companies.
That's it for the Climate Action Show this week. You were listening to Jeremy Walker talking about the Senate inquiry into misinformation and disinformation. On our website, you'll find links to Jeremy's full submission, as well as other documents mentioned on today's program. Definitely worth a look. Thanks for listening, and thanks also to Tilda, who, I have to say, this show today would not have been possible without her. So now stay tuned for Breadline, but before that we're just going to play you out with a song from Patti Smith, which includes the line, "People have the power to wrestle the world from fools." And I'm sure that's true. So here's Patti Smith.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.